Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. The score after day one, four balls at the 2024 President's Cup. United States 5, International Team 0. Rex, it's the first opening day sweep for the Americans since 2000. A simple question for you. One day in, is this thing already over?
we just had a good time on live from before the cameras came on, because I told Todd Lewis that yes, it's over. This is done, and that's ridiculous. I mean, mathematically, we all know that's not the case. It's 5 points. There's 25 more points on the table, and the first one to 15 and a half wins. And so you can sit here, and you and I can come up with a scenario where somehow Mike Weir turns this team around. However, just hasn't happened. We haven't seen it. If you look at what they're going into tomorrow, foursomes, which is by far their worst session. It's by far their worst format. They've been outscored in these matches by 33 points in alternate shot. And that's what they're going into tomorrow. And the idea, they haven't even won one of those sessions. They haven't won a foursome sessions since 2005, almost two decades. So to say their back is against the wall is a wild understatement. So yes, absolutely. Mathematically, they can do it. But I don't see a path. And I do find it a little amusing that you were about 40 minutes away from trying to talk yourself into thinking that the Internationals could have won last night, and here we are, 5-0.
This is exactly why you should not have 2 months to think about anything, because you can twist yourself into pretzels, you can twist yourself into knots, and you can basically convince yourself of anything. My takeaway, Rex, from the first day here at Royal Montreal was that this was an unmitigated disaster. You look at how the international team has performed at home in this format, 39.5 to 21.5. over the Americans. Like, this was their format. This is exactly why Mike Weir wanted to start
four balls. You're talking about four balls.
They perform better in it. They can get the home crowd behind them. They can play from ahead, which is something they really have not done in the President's Cup. Just once in the last eight President's Cups have they actually led after the opening session and sort of being on the defensive or on their back foot and basically just trying to scrape and claw to get whatever points they can against what is historically and traditionally a much stronger American team. And they just completely stunk. This was a benign day. I thought the opening ceremony was really lame and weird and just sort of just benign and drawn out. The first tee build out I thought was really weak, and like you didn't have you had a muted Canadian crowd that really didn't even stick around for Taylor Pendrith, who was in the fourth group off, Corey Connors in the fifth group off. By the time those guys actually teed off, the stands were half full by that point. I think the crowds overall weren't really into it when, you know, for the majority of the day at least, it was pretty narrow margins, right? There was one up leads. You really didn't see any three up leads or blowouts. The crowd here at Royal Montreal really could have played a significant factor in it. And instead, it was very benign, very docile, very quiet, very unenergetic. And Mike Weir talked about in the spring how he wanted to have a more hostile home crowd, create a bigger home field advantage than what they had here in 2007. Taylor Pendrith and Tom Kim both said that they were somewhat disappointed by the crowd and sort of the lack of energy that you saw on day one. It might be too late to salvage it, you know, by the time you get to the weekend. And if this thing is 8-2, like it looked and it was in 2022 at Quail Hollow, like it doesn't matter how loud the home crowd is. This thing is effectively over at that point.
Play better. Play better. If you want the crowd behind you, play better. I mean, that's the only way to do it. And I'm also sick and tired of hearing how close it is. And I have nothing but a monsoon of respect for Mike Weir, because I think he has done everything in his power to try to prepare this team for what was going to be a very difficult uphill climb. However, we have heard for decades now, all of these matches are so close. All of these matches are always one up, one down. They're always going back and forth. Yeah, but more times than not, those one ups and one downs go the Americans' way, just like they did today. They look close on paper, and they're not really close. And this boils down to what you and I addressed last night on the preview podcast. For the international team to have any even a modicum of a chance of trying to pull this thing off, they needed production from the top end of their lineup, and they needed the Canadians to do something special. The top end of their lineup, Adam Scott, Hideki Matsuyama, combined to go 5-under par for the day in best ball. All right. Xander Schauffele would have beat them single-handedly with what he did on the golf course today. They just didn't do it. And every time I have this conversation with Adam Scott, I walk away feeling awful I walk away feeling terrible for him because I have to wonder how much longer does he want really want to do this? Like in 2 years, if this goes the way it's going right now and it's another blowout, it's not exciting, and the internationals just get their hat handed to him, how many more times do you want to put yourself through this? It's a tough scene. It's just a tough, tough scene.
I guess maybe if you're Adam Scott, the only solace could be, hey, in 2 years, the landscape of golf could look differently. Maybe the roster for the internationals brings back some of the live players who have defected. Who knows? Again, that is a long way off. I was thinking, though, Rex, with the unique format of the President's Cup being 4 days as opposed to the Ryder Cup with 3 days when you have multiple sessions each of the first 2 days, do you think it's easier to reset after this as opposed to a Ryder Cup format? Keep in mind, last fall in Rome, the U.S. got swept in that opening session, didn't play particularly well in the afternoon as well. It was sort of an uphill battle the rest of the way before, inevitably, there's always going to be like that weekend surge where everyone gets a little bit excited and you start to wonder, huh, you know, is a miracle comeback on the offing? On one hand, you go right back out there in the Ryder Cup format, and if you're not playing well that day, you're probably going to continue that into the afternoon. This is a little bit differently in that you're sitting with that result for 24 hours. You can have your team meeting, you can reset, you can get a full night's rest. They don't tee off until 1:05 p.m. Eastern time on Friday. You can get in some practice, you can get your game in order. Do you think it's easier in this format to mount a comeback as opposed to the Ryder Cup?
In theory, I see what you're saying. The idea that you've got a Mike Weir can sit down with his team tonight, you can get rested, you can get a good dinner, you can try to clear their heads and come out tomorrow. The one thing that goes against that is what we've already touched on. Like, this was supposed to be the format. Best ball was supposed to be the one. There's a reason why you led off with this format, because that was the one where you've had more success than alternate shot. And tomorrow you're going into the one that you haven't had virtually any success in. 2005, that's the last time they won one of those sessions. So it's hard for me to wrap my mind around how they're going to do it. I like what Mike Weir did with the fairings going in tomorrow. I think Adam Scott and Pendrith, I believe, is who he's going to be with. I think that's kind of inspired. I like the idea because I think Pendrith actually played pretty well today. I saw some really, really solid shots out of Adam Scott. But Hideki Matsuyama leading off, like, you have to do something. And I will flip it around to the American side, because I just did a hit on Live From just about how Xander Schauffele has emerged as this team's leader. And if there was any angst at all on the U.S. side coming into this, and there probably wasn't any angst, if I'm being honest, but if there was, it was who was going to be the team leader, because this is the first time since 2012 that you don't have either Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas. And they had become sort of the de facto leaders of that team. Earlier in the week, Jim Furyk said it was going to be Xander Schauffele, and today it turned out to be Xander Schauffele. It wasn't by accident that he was in that first group off today, and he's leading inside the team room and he's leading on the golf course. The internationals just don't have that, and they're heading into the format that they don't play well.
Yeah, and you look statistically, the reason they don't play well, the reason why it's certainly ominous heading into Friday foursomes, approach play is the most significant attribute of a good approach play is the most significant attribute of the foursomes format. The Americans have by far the better iron players in this competition. We're talking like 30 or 40 positions in strokes gained approach. This is the spread. We'll get into the pairings here in just a couple of minutes. You mentioned Xander Schauffele, who certainly stood out as one of the stars for Team USA on day one, taking what was a tied match, hitting great shots into 17 and 18 to win that match alongside Tony Finau, one up. Who else stood out for you for the Americans to build what could be an insurmountable advantage here?
Could be. I'm going to go with Scotty Scheffler. I'm going to say that Xander Schauffele has become the leader inside that team room, and I do believe that. We have seen that. But make no mistake, Scotty Scheffler is the alpha male. He's the world number one, and he performed like it on day one. He went out and did Scotty Scheffler things. I was fascinated when Jim Furyk was kind of asked about how he came up with that pairing of putting Russell Henley with Scotty Scheffler, when everyone on the outside felt like Scotty's got Sam Burns. They're good friends. They've done this before. He's just going to put them back together again. I would love to see the analytics that said this was going to be a good pairing, because on paper, I'm not quite sure I saw it 100%. It didn't jump off the page at me. And we talked about this last night. Russell Henley does all the things right that you would think you would want to do when you're paired with the world number one in four ball competition. It's a lot of greens. Hits a lot of fairways, putts well. So I get that, but it's not like he did anything. He's never done anything special in the match play. It's not like you've ever seen anything special out of him in one of those high profile situations where we talked about it. Like when did we see the dog come out of Russell Henley? We saw it today.
Absolutely. I mean, Russell Henley over those 16 holes played better than Scottie Scheffler. He was 4 under par on his own ball. Scottie was 3 under, six under par between them. Really put away Tom Kim and Sung Jae Im. Sung Jae Im played, I thought, quite well and just could not get a single putt to drop. Russell Henley was sort of my unsung hero for Team USA, at least on day one. Keegan Bradley, obviously a huge standout. He's been waiting a decade to get back in the U.S. team room, trying to lead not just in what could be a future captaincy role, but also trying to show these guys that, hey, that your 2025 Ryder Cup captain can play well as well. Had some huge moments, huge momentum swings, big putts on par threes, had the putt on 18 to close it out, made 6 putts longer than 10 feet. We know Keegan Bradley is one of the preeminent drivers of the golf ball of his generation. His putter has let him down so far this season. That was not the case on day one. He's not going to be playing on day two. So he'll get a sort of a up close look at what he could be doing as a captain. But it was certainly a standout performance for Keegan Bradley on the first day here.
And look, if you're listening to this podcast, you're trying to figure out, well, why should I tune in on Friday? And this is going to be tough for you and I to make this argument. However, I will say that there was excitement on Thursday, and you had a front row seat. Certainly with what happened between Scottie Scheffler and Tom Kim. And for a moment early in the day, you would have thought, oh, this is going to be special. Tom Kim is kind of picking up where he left off at Quail Hollow 2 years ago. He's being boisterous. He's being loud. He's fist pumping. And Scottie Scheffler wanted no part of it.
He certainly didn't want any part of it, Rex. That's the story that I have up on NBCSports.com/golf right now. And to me, that was sort of that moment underscored exactly why Scottie Scheffler is as dominant as he is and why the international team just cannot get over the hump and beat the Americans. When it comes to Scottie Scheffler, it was one up heading into the ninth hole. He and Russell Henley combined for 4 birdies the rest of the way. The international team of Tom Kim and Sung Jae Im did not win a single hole after what was a little bit of a dust up, breach of etiquette, gamesmanship, however you want to describe it. Tom Kim and Sung Jae Im going to the next tee at the behest of Camilo Vijayguess. Scottie says he didn't notice it. He was too busy lining up his putt. Russell Henley said he did notice it and did not like it all that much. Kevin Kisner confronted Camilo Vijayguess about it, told him exactly how he felt. The line that I loved, Rex, if you want to play that, if this is the way they want to do it, game on. When I talked to Kevin Kisner afterward, he said that he was loving it. Quote, if you can piss off the number one player in the world, then I'm all for it. To me, though, Rex, the reason why that was such an important moment, not because of how Scottie Scheffler and Russell Henley responded, to me, it also suggested a lot about the international team and how they responded to that incident. Rather than sort of digging into the drama and continuing to be antagonistic, rather, you know, continuing to prove that they're unafraid and they're game for this fight, they sort of stood down. Like, the intensity dipped, the tension fizzled, they didn't make any momentum putts. You know, Tom Kim said afterward that he doesn't, quote, shy away from Scottie Scheffler. It certainly didn't appear that way. It was sort of awkward. He was sort of timid around Scottie Scheffler on the greens when he made a long birdie putt on 10 to match Scottie on 10. Like, he hardly emoted at all. Like, he just gave a little fist pump, and that was it. It certainly seemed like he'd been humbled, like he was a little bit afraid of Scottie Scheffler. That is exactly what the internationals cannot do. You have to be game. You have to be fit for the fight. And I thought Tom Kim's reaction over the second half of that match was indicative of a larger problem for this international team.
And I'm going to continue the dog analogy that we've worn out the last 2 days. It seems like they got the tail between their legs after that one. Like, Tom Kim tried to stand up to Scottie Scheffler, and it seems like Scottie put him in his place. And the idea of walking off the tee and whatever dust up that caused, I mean, Johnson Wagner and Brandel Chamblee had a long talk about on live from tonight. It's one of those unwritten rules. I think it's stupid. Like, what does it matter if they're standing there watching you on the green or they walk to the next tee? I don't care if they see me make this putt or miss this putt. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other. So I don't understand where the disrespect came in, but I do agree with Kisner's take. The idea that you're going to poke the bear, I think was Xander's comment about it when he was asked about it, is kind of ridiculous in this case. because you're taking on a player who has been absolutely dominant this year. And look, they're friends. They play a lot of golf back home in Dallas at the Olympics. Tom Kim talked about how much he's learned hanging out with Scottie Scheffler and how much he's helped him sort of emotionally get through some hard times in his career, both professionally and personally. But you can't do that in that situation. You're only going to feel the wrath. And we've saw that throughout parts of Tiger Woods' career when this has come up, where a player has probably stepped over the line. And I think this is a really good example of we sort of overlook Scottie Scheffler sometimes, of being this mild-mannered guy who goes out and he punches a time card and he's really good at what he does. And he doesn't really have that. You don't really see that much emotion. You don't see that much histrionics or anything like that on the golf course. In this particular case, he pushed the wrong button and he pushed back.
And look, there's some questions about Scottie Scheffler heading into this President's Cup. Like, he was 0-5-3 over his last two cups. He hadn't found a consistent partner with which he'd really thrived. And he was now playing with a virtual unknown in Russell Henley, who at age 35 is making his team competition debut. I've always been struck, Rex, by the fact that there's two Scottie Schefflers. There's the PGA Tour Scottie Scheffler, the unflappable, dominant player, and there's a Scottie Scheffler at home who loves to brag. He loves to boast. He loves to play wolf. He loves to get under your skin. He's a prolific trash talker in home games. This, to him, felt like a home game against Tom Kim. And what Tom Kim did is exactly what he would do at home, and he got the exact same reaction that he was anticipating. It almost seemed like Scottie Scheffler needed a little bit of a spark or for someone to get under his skin. What was clearly the pivotal moment in that match and what transpired with Kisner in Vegas on the ninth tee, it ended up being a pretty decisive victory for Scottie Scheffler and Russell Henley. Let's look ahead quickly, Rex, to the Friday foursomes pairings. Let's go through the first one, Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele reprising that old partnership against Hideki Matsuyama and Sung Jae Im, the top 2 points earners on the international qualifiers.
I think Jim Furyk had a good plan coming in. And look, you can splitting them up on day one. I'm talking about Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. I know that probably raised some eyebrows, but clearly he saw something in the analytics. He saw something in interpersonal relationships between the two. And you kind of got the feeling, and I think you mentioned this last night, four ball, for all us talking about the strategy and who you're going to pair with who and the science of it, it's really just golf. You're just playing golf. There's nothing really different about playing four ball versus playing singles or playing just in a normal tournament. You're just trying to shoot the lowest score you can on every hole. Now, you can play off your partner a little bit, and you can take advantage of things in certain areas. But tomorrow, the ultimate shot, that's the one where the strategy comes in. And it's clear that Xander and Pat make a very, very good alternate shot team. I mean, if Hideki can get a point or even a half point out of that, I'd be pretty surprised.
I mean, that's as strong a team as the internationals can field. That is literally strength on strength. It's certainly a statement. Keep in mind that Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele have been 0 for their last three together. Xander Schauffele, again, one of the stars on day one. Patrick Cantlay was not too shabby himself. Sung Jae Im, as mentioned, could not get anything to fall on Thursday. Struck the ball well, lost strokes gained more than two shots to the field. How about the second pairing? Rex Sahith, Thagala, and Kyle Morikawa going out together again, this time in the alternate shot format, taking on Adam Scott and Taylor Pendrith. Who are you liking that one?
I'm going to lean towards the internationals. I mean, that's really their only hope on this one. If somehow Adam Scott can find a way to be Adam Scott in these matches, and he has struggled to do that historically over the decades, and he's got a really good partner in Pendrith, and I think Pendrith is probably going to shake off what happened on Thursday. And if he can somehow get the home crowd behind him, I think you're right on that one. They just weren't there on day one. I think that's more on the team than it is the crowd. I think there's something to it. And I mean, if you're going to look for a flaw, and I think Sahith did play well, he looked a little nervy early, and playing in the alternate shot format is probably not going to help that.
I'm with you on that one. Kyle Morikawa is playing flawlessly, hardly missing a fairway, hardly missing a green. Sahith's erratic nature, at least that he can be, makes that one a little bit dicey for the Americans. However, he does have a pretty slick short game if they do get a little bit out of position. That feels like a must win if you're the internationals. Taylor Pendrith was the best player on Thursdays for the internationals. You wonder if Adam Scott, 44-year-old, don't know how many more of these he's going to be playing in his career, if he'll have a good speech on Thursday night for the boys. We will certainly stay tuned for that. This one is very interesting, Rex. The third match out, Max Homa coming off the bench alongside Brian Harman. versus Jason Day and Christian Bezuidenhout. What do you like?
I'm just staring. I'm not deflecting at all here, but I'm staring at the TV at live from they're showing me. I had forgot about the Mac Hughes. It's happened so long ago. Opening the day by drinking a beer on the first tee. Chef's kiss. Love the idea. Estella. How can you do that? How can you drink Estella? Like Mac. Like, man, mad respect. But come on. At Labatt's come Blue. On, there's a lot of Molson. Different options. I'm with you. This one is fascinating to me for a lot of different reasons. One, we addressed this, the Max Homa, Brian Harman situation, where clearly Max is not playing well coming into this. And you would have thought today, four ball would have been the better option for Captain Furyk to send him out, try to get some sort of confidence. There will be nowhere to hide tomorrow for Max. So I am curious to see what kind of game he has when he shows up. I think Harman will be a very good partner, but you can only carry a guy so far. What gets me, and I might be wrong on this, I believe Furyk went first with his pick, correct? Going into tomorrow. I believe he threw down Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. And the way it works, it goes back and forth. So that means Mike Weir would have gone first in the second pairing with throwing out Adam Scott and Pendrith. And then it would have gone back to the Americans to throw out Max Homa and Brian Harman, if I have that correct. I don't understand what Mike Weir was thinking, because what I saw out of Bezuidenhout today was not great. Jason Day was solid. I thought he played actually pretty good, but I thought Christian struggled. So I'm not quite sure you saw if there is a weakness in the U.S. lineup, it's at least on paper, you're going to say it's going to be Homa and Harman. And I don't think Mike Weir matched that.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Like, this is the weakest pairing that the international team could have possibly put out against what is by far the weakest American team. You're right about Max Homa. No clue what we are going to get. You just had to know that Jim Furyk was not going to be sitting Max Homa for the first 2 days. There's no way he was going to dent his confidence in what is already probably pretty low, suffering through what is a pretty miserable slump at the moment. Christian Bezuidenhout was by far the worst player on day one for the internationals. Didn't just lose two strokes to the field, tee to green. He also lost it on the greens. If Christian Bezuidenhout is not making putts, which is the hallmark of his game, he really doesn't offer a whole lot. Missed some crucial putts down the stretch in what became an eventual one-up loss to Keegan Bradley and Wyndham Clark. That one was certainly a head-scratcher for me. Fourth match out, Rex, Wyndham Clark and Tony Finau versus the all-Canadian pairing, Corey Connors and Matt Hughes.
I do like this one, and I thought Wyndham Clark played really well, as did Tony Finau. I expected him to play well. I didn't know exactly what we were going to get out of Wyndham Clark. He's had an up-and-down season. I thought he met the moment. I thought he embraced the crowd. He embraced everything about these matches. But I think it's going to be a good fight. Like, there's a reason why Mike Weir sat Matt Hughes on day one. And it just wasn't because he wanted him to drink a beer on the first tee. I think that pairing itself between Corey Connors, getting the Canadians out there, that and probably the Adam Scott match will be the turn points here. If somehow they can figure out a way to get an international shield on the board and get some sort of momentum and get this crowd behind them for the first time all week long, that could be important.
It certainly could be important. Again, curious that they would send out the Canadian team out fourth as they did on Thursday. Yeah, if you're trying to gin up some interest in the crowd. Again, as Notre Begay made a very good point, if you send them out first, just to send them out first up against a sort of a juggernaut pairing for the Americans, it sort of defeats the purpose if they're not going to win. Wyndham Clark and Tony Finau, an interesting pairing. Wyndham Clark, one of the best drivers, most prolific drivers of the golf ball. Tony Finau, one of the best iron players. Obviously, Corey Connors and Mackenzie Hughes known each other for more than a decade, former Kent State teammates. Hopefully, Matt Hughes can bring the best out of Corey Connors, who has really struggled in his President's Cup career, now 0-5. How about the final match of the day? Scottie Scheffler, Russell Henley, we've talked about them endlessly, going up against Siwoo Kim and Ben Ahn.
I don't think Ben Ahn or Siwoo Kim are going to play poorly. And I would expect them to continue to do the same on Friday when they come out. I don't think it's going to matter. Like I said, I would love to pick Jim Furyk's mind after this week and figure out how, why. Show me the numbers. Show me the analytics. Give me the conversations that were held behind closed doors that made you think that Scottie Scheffler and Russell Henley were going to work out. And we could have read between the lines. We had pairings starting on Saturday, and he had them in the same pairings every day. So it was all right there in front of us. And Jim Furyk talked about the idea that as the week went by, he wanted to see how they would gel. And it's been fun to watch sort of this new pairing emerge. It's been impressive, actually.
It certainly is. I think if you're looking from a statistician standpoint, the two of the best iron players on the PGA Tour, they're just going to put so much pressure on their opponent, really never going to be out of a hole. That's just going to be such a tough pairing. Siwoo Kim Ben-on does not make a whole lot of sense on paper. Two great ball strikers, two really poor putters. So unless they're going to be hitting 15 or 16 greens on Friday, you have to think that that is going to be a loss for the internationals. Big picture, Keegan Bradley, Sam Burns sitting for the Americans, Tom Kim and Minwoo Lee sitting for the internationals. Another bit of a head scratcher for me there, for Mike Weir as well, Rex. If you're needing a boost, if you're trying to overcome this 5-0 deficit, if you're trying to win for the first time since 1998, how do you leave Tom Kim and Minwoo Lee, your most energetic human spark plugs, on the bench in what will be an incredibly pivotal day for the internationals to try and get in this thing? Did not make a whole lot of sense to me.
It's the Mike Tyson line. And look, Mike Weir talked about it. He has a game plan, and so did Jim Furyk. And when he showed up, this was the game plan, and I'm not going to deviate from it. And I always come back to the great Mike Tyson line, where everyone has a plan until you get punched in the mouth. And the international team got punched in the mouth today, and it doesn't seem like Mike Weir was adjusting very well. And again, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. And as you just unfolded, as you just told the story of what unfolded between Tom Kim and Scottie Scheffler, there might be more to this. It seems to me like maybe Tom was a little rattled by the entire incident, because you're right. He went catatonic the rest of the day. There was very little in the way of fist pumping. There was very little in the way of engaging the crowd, even engaging his own partner. So I'm not quite sure how that works out. And maybe this is, and my understanding, and you can correct me, Todd Lewis was in on that scrum when you had a chance to talk to Camilo Villegas about it, but the assistant captain, I think Camilo tried to talk him down to try to keep this from blowing up a little bit more. And that might've impacted him. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. Certainly very curious. Some other player is going to have to step up for the internationals if they want to get back in this thing. The five worst performers from a strokes gained perspective on Thursday, Rex, were internationals. Four of them will tee it up in foursomes, the more demanding format. I'm going 9-1 US after day two.
9-1. What do you think we're looking at? Oh, I was just about to say, you mentioned 8-2 earlier, doesn't do him much good. Actually, 3-2 tomorrow in that format, which we have painted the picture very clearly. They don't play this format very well against the Americans. I thought 3-2 was a little aggressive, actually. Like, if the Americans come out of that just winning 3 points, I'm going to be a little surprised, to be honest with you. But 9-1, I know it was very lopsided on day one. I know that they don't have a very good record against the Americans in alternate shot. But if somehow they let it slip to 9-1, that would just be a gut punch. That would be devastating.
I don't like the pairings. I don't like the order. I don't like who they're sitting.
You're a little dark about this whole thing. You need to prep yourself up.
On Thursday, I'm anticipating the worst. I think we're going to see an onslaught on Friday, and this thing could potentially be an absolute snoozer. But hey, how about that for a tease? Please make sure you listen to the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav for the rest of the week. We'll be doing these regardless of how lopsided the score is, breaking it down in intimate detail as we have done on this episode. All right. That is going to do it for this edition. You guys are the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Rex has a story up on Xander. I have one on the Scottie Scheffler, Tom Kim kerfuffle. We'll be back on Friday for a recap from the second day of foursomes. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys in about 24 hours.
What's the difference between a kerfuffle and a Donnybrook?